Hey, it's me. It's Alex. Welcome, as usual, to the October monthly ramble. I have decided this month to do something a little different, which, if you've been with me for, if you've been a member of the Patreon for more than a few months, you might be rolling your eyes and saying, okay, but you do something a little different every time, so. But that's the fun of it, you know? The monthly ramble can be kind of anything. It can be anything it needs to be. You know, in the past, sometimes I'll talk about analytics or, you know, some behind-the-scenes content of, you know, how episodes are made, or, I don't know, just talk about plans for the future, the channel, and blah, blah, blah. And you know, sometimes I'll talk about random things, like what I'm watching on TV, and things I'm into, and stuff like that. But sometimes I think it's really nice just to, based on the feedback that I get from you guys, I think sometimes it's nice to just have a ramble that is, you know, just something to put on in the background. And personally, I really like ambience. I like making ambience, like sound designing. And I just thought it'd be really fun to do something today that, you know, kind of just feels like a cozy night at home. Or, I don't know, a cozy night somewhere that is enjoyable to you, wherever that might be. And I want to take more opportunities to practice my ambience design, so yeah, I was thinking I would just do a little bit of reading out loud, which I have done before in the past on a couple rambles, and just to kind of give a good vibe. So hopefully, yeah, you can throw this on, and it'll be, you know, just a nice kind of comforting, friendly voice to listen to while you do stuff. If you don't mind, I'm going to read a little bit from the novel Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy. I'm currently reading this monster of a book, and it's really good. It's really long. I don't know if you've seen an actual copy of the book, but my copy, it's just like an old paperback got from somewhere, and it is, let's see, 870 pages, so that's pretty big. I was just gonna read a little bit from this book and give you all just something nice and pleasant to listen to. I'm gonna pick up this is page 64 in my copy, and it is chapter 18. The title character, Anna, has not even been introduced yet. On page 64. I actually think she's about to be introduced in this chapter, so that's exciting. Before I get started, I'll just give you a little rundown. I'm going to read from the back of the book. A magnificent drama of vengeance, infidelity, and retribution. Anna Karenina portrays the moving story of people whose emotions conflict with the dominant social... I can't read this word because it's scratched out. So the dominant social beliefs of their time. Sensual, rebellious Anna falls deeply and passionately in love with the handsome Count Vronsky, and she refuses to conduct the discreet affair that her cold, ambitious husband and Russian high society would condone. She's doomed. Set against the tragic love of Anna and Vronsky, the plight of the melancholy nobleman Konstantin Levin unfolds. In doubt about the meaning of life, haunted by thoughts of suicide, Levin's struggles echo Tolstoy's own spiritual crisis. but Anna's inner turmoil mirrors the emotional imprisonment and mental disintegration of a woman who dares to transgress the structures of a patriarchal world. In Anna Karenina, Leo Tolstoy brought to perfection the novel of social realism and created a masterpiece that bared the Russian soul. So yeah, this is a romance, but kind of a classic literature romance by, like I said, by Tolstoy. Very, 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 very classic, well-known Russian book, and it was first printed in 1876. So this is an old one, but it's really good. All right. Let's get started. Make sure you have, you know, if you need water or maybe like a nice warm beverage, you should have that close at hand. Maybe light a candle to, or some incense or something to kind of, you know, get a nice vibe going. Whatever you need to do, go ahead and do it. I'm gonna grab my coffee, which is right over here. Sorry, kicking things over. Okay, let's have a sip of this. And let's get started. Vronsky followed the conductor into the car and stopped on the threshold of the compartment to make way for a woman coming out. With the instinctive reaction of a man of the world, Vronsky, with one glance at this woman's appearance, placed her as belonging to the best society. He apologized and was about to go on into the carriage, but he felt it necessary to glance at her once again. Not because she was very beautiful, nor because of the elegance and demure grace visible in everything about her, but because there was something particularly tender and caressing in the expression of her sweet face as she passed by him. When he looked around, she also turned her head. Her shining gray eyes, which because of their thick lashes seemed dark, paused with friendly attentiveness at his face, as though she recognized him, and then swept on at once to the passing crowd, as though looking for someone. In the short glance, Vronsky had time to notice the subdued vitality that played over her face and fluttered between her shining eyes, and the scarcely perceptible smile that curved her rosy lips. It was as though an excess of something so filled her whole being that it expressed itself against her will, sometimes in the brilliance of her gaze, sometimes in her smile. She deliberately tried to extinguish that light in her eyes, but it blazed out against her will in that faint smile. Vronsky entered the car. His mother, a dried-up old woman with black eyes and ringlets, screwed up her eyes as she looked at her son. She smiled slightly with her thin lips. She got up from the seat, gave her handbag to the maid, and held her dry little hand out to her son to kiss. And she raised his head and kissed his face. "You got my telegram? Are you all right? Thank God." "Have you had a good trip?" said her son, sitting down beside her and listening involuntarily to a woman's voice outside the door. He knew it was the voice of the woman he had just met as he entered the carriage. "Just the same, I don't agree with you," the voice was saying. "A Petersburg point of view, madam." "Not Petersburg, just a woman's," she replied. "Well, allow me to kiss your hand. Goodbye then, monsieur. Take a look round for my brother and send him to me," said the woman, just outside the door. Then she came back into the compartment again. "Well, did you find your brother?" said Vronsky's mother to her. Vronsky realized now that this was Karenin's wife, Anna. "Your brother is here," he said, getting to his feet. "Forgive me, I didn't recognize you. For that matter, our acquaintance was so brief," said Vronsky, bowing, "that you surely don't remember me." "Oh no, I should have recognized you. I think your mother and I spent the entire trip talking of nothing but you," she said, finally allowing the liveliness that had been trying to shine through to show itself in a smile. "But anyhow, my brother isn't here." "Go and call him, Alexis," said the old countess. Vronsky went out onto the platform and shouted, "Oblonsky, over here!" But Anna did not wait for her brother. When she saw him, she stepped out of the carriage with a firm, light tread. As soon as Oblonsky came up to her, she flung her left arm around his neck with a motion that surprised Vronsky by its firmness and grace, pulled him toward her very quickly, and kissed him heartily. Without turning his eye away, Vronsky looked at her and smiled. He didn't know why. But he remembered that his mother was waiting for him and went back into the carriage. "Very sweet, isn't she?" said the Countess about Anna. "Her husband put her into my compartment, and I was delighted. We chatted together the whole way. And as for you, they say, vous filez le parfait amour. Tant mieux, mon cher, tant mieux." "I have no idea what you're referring to, Mama," her son answered coldly. "Well, shall we go?" Anna came into the carriage again to say goodbye to the Countess. "There, Countess, you've met your son, and I my brother," she said gaily. "And all my little stories are exhausted. There would have been nothing else to tell." "Oh, no," said the Countess, taking her by the hand. "I could travel all around the world with you and never be bored. You're one of those delightful women. It's a pleasure both to talk to and to be silent with. And please don't think about your son anymore. It's impossible never to be separated, after all." Anna stood there motionless, holding herself very erect and smiling with her eyes. "Anna has a little son, 8 years old, I think," the Countess explained to Vronsky. "She's never been separated from him and keeps worrying about having left him." "Yes, the Countess and I spent the whole time talking, she about her son and I about mine," said Anna. And once again, a smile lit up her face, a caressing smile due to him. "You must have been awfully bored," he said, instantly catching in mid-flight the ball of coquetry she had tossed him. But apparently she did not feel like continuing the conversation in this tone. She turned to the old Countess. "I'm very grateful to you. I scarcely noticed how the day passed. Goodbye, Countess." "Goodbye, my dear," the Countess answered. "Let me kiss your charming face. As an old woman, all I can do is tell you straight out that I've fallen in love with you." However casual the phrase, Anna plainly believed it from her heart and was delighted by it. She blushed, bent over a little, and held out her face to the Countess's mouth. Then she straightened up again, and with the same smile hovering between her eyes and lips, gave Vronsky her hand. He pressed the small hand held out to him. The energetic pressure with which she firmly and boldly shook his hand, as though it were something special, delighted him. She went out with the rapid stride that carried her rather full body with such peculiar lightness. "Very sweet," said the old lady. Her son thought the same. His eyes followed her as long as her graceful figure was still visible, and a smile lingered on his lips. Through the window, he watched her go up to her brother, put her arm through his, and in a lively way start telling him something that obviously had nothing to do with Vronsky, who found this very annoying. "Well, Mama, how are you? Are you quite well?" he repeated, turning to his mother. "Everything is all right, splendid. Alexander was terribly sweet. Marie has become very pretty. She's very interesting." She began talking once again about what interested her most of all, her grandson's christening, which was the reason for her trip to Petersburg, and about the special favor the Tsar had shown her eldest son. "There's Lavrenty at last," said Vronsky, looking through the window. "Shall we go now, if it's all right with you?" The old major domo, who had been traveling with the Countess, appeared in the carriage to report that everything was ready. The Countess stood up to go. "Let's go. There are not so many people now," said Vronsky. The maid took the handbag and the little dog. The majordomo and the porter carried the other bags. Vronsky took his mother by the arm. But when they had left the carriage, a number of people with frightened faces suddenly ran past. The station master, with his peculiar colored cap, also ran past them. It was evident that something unusual had happened. The people who had left the train were running back. "What is it? What? Where? Jumped in front. Run over," the passersby could be heard shouting. Oblonsky, with his sister on his arm, both of them also looking frightened, came back, and to avoid the crowd, stood beside the carriage. The women went into the carriage, while Vronsky and Oblonsky followed the crowd to find out the details of the accident. A guard, either because he was drunk or too bundled up against severe cold, had not heard a train being shunted and had been run over. Even before Vronsky and Oblonsky had come back, the women had learned these details from the majordomo. Oblonsky and Vronsky had both seen the mangled corpse. Oblonsky was visibly distressed. His face was puckered up. He seemed ready to burst into tears. "How horrible! Oh, Anna, if you'd only seen! Oh, how horrible!" he kept repeating. Vronsky was silent. His handsome face was grave, but quite calm. "Oh, if you had only seen it, Countess," said Oblonsky. "And his wife is there. Oh, it's horrible to see her. She flung herself on the body. They say he was the sole support of a huge family. Horrible." "But isn't it possible to do something for her?" said Anna in an agitated whisper. Vronsky looked at her and left the carriage at once. "I'll be back immediately, Mama," he remarked, turning in the doorway. When he came back a few minutes later, Oblonsky was already chatting with the Countess about a new singer. The Countess was glancing impatiently at the door, waiting for her son. "We can go now," said Vronsky, coming in. They left together. Vronsky went on ahead with his mother, followed by Anna and her brother. At the exit, Vronsky was overtaken by the station master. "You gave my assistant 200 rubles. Would you be so kind as to tell me whom you meant them for?" "For the widow," said Vronsky with a shrug. "I don't understand what there is to ask about." "Did you give something?" exclaimed Oblonsky from behind, and pressing his sister's arm, he added, "Very kind, really, very kind. Isn't he a splendid chap? Well, Countess, my respects." Oblonsky and his sister stayed behind, looking for her maid. By the time they left, the Vronsky's carriage had already driven off. The people coming out were still talking about what had happened. "What a horrible death," said someone passing by. "They say he was cut in two." "On the contrary, I think it's the easiest. It's instantaneous," said someone else. "But how can they be so careless?" said a third. Anna sat down in the carriage. To his astonishment, Oblonsky saw that her lips were trembling and that she was only holding back her tears with difficulty. "What's the matter with you, Anna?" he asked after they had gone back 100 yards. "It's a bad omen," she said. "Oh, what nonsense," said Oblonsky. "The main thing is that you've come. You can't imagine how I'm counting on you." "Have you known Vronsky long?" she asked. "Yes. You know, we're hoping he'll marry Kitty." "Oh?" said Anna softly. "Well now, let's talk about you," she added, shaking her head as though trying to drive away physically something superfluous. Something superfluous that was bothering her. "Let me hear about your troubles. I got your letter, and here I am." "Yes, everything depends on you," said Oblonsky. "Well, tell me about it." And Oblonsky began his story. When they got home, Oblonsky helped his sister out, sighed, pressed her hand, and drove to the office.